Hey, thanks for listening to the Bryant Park Project from NPR News. We are always online at npr.org. Everybody has moved very nicely, single file, into the studio. Ian chillaxing over there by the window. Lauren Silver.
Chillaxing.
your debut. It's your most debut, isn't it, today?
Yes, it is.
Dan Pashman, a little sore. We're not going to say from what. We're going to keep it clean.
Get your mind out of the gutter.
These are the most emailed, most viewed, and most popular stories on the internet. This is the BPP crew, and this is the most. In pretty in pink today, editor Tricia McKinney wearing the hot pink.
You flatter me.
It flatters you.
Thanks. Ooh. My gosh, I wish the radio audience could see me. Anyway, I have number 2 right now on Google Trends, dropped down from number 1 overnight, is the term remote area medical. This is a charity group, that was featured on 60 Minutes last night. I never heard of them before. They are totally amazing. They set up emergency clinics for patients who can't get medical care other ways. They originally meant to, you know, I think their very first mission was in Latin America, but it turns out most of their work now is in the U.S. They serve a lot of uninsured and underinsured Americans. And so this profile, it was a Scott Pelley piece profiling one of their stops in Knoxville, Tennessee, where people lined up overnight to wait for a chance to see doctors at this clinic. I have a little clip from that piece.
It was 27 degrees. The young and the old would spend the night in their cars, running the engine for heat, but not too much, not at $3 a gallon. At 5 a.m., we took a walk through the parking lot.
How long you been out here tonight?
We got up at 3 o'clock this morning, and we got here about 4. We've been out here for a little while. It's cold.
Why'd you come so early?
Because we wanted to be seen.
So those people were... That woman was one of 920 patients RAM saw. The group made 500 pairs of glasses. They did 94 mammograms. They extracted over 1,000 teeth, did 567 fillings, but they had to turn 400 people away.
It's an amazing story.
It really is. I mean, just how many people don't have enough insurance.
Rachel, you're next.
I am next. I'm going to tell you about a story that's one of the most emailed on NewYorkTimes.com. The headline is, I Need a Virtual Break, No Really. And it's the story of one man's journey, search, quest to unplug everything in his life, just one day a week. I mean, the whole premise is that we're all way too connected. Everybody knows this. We talk about it a lot. But have you ever tried to do this? I mean, really just designate one full day where you just unplug everything.
I saw a news report about a company, a CEO of a small company, smallish, that on Fridays he doesn't let his people send email. You have to get up and go over and actually talk to your...
I think they quote that in here. Someone from Intel has run a couple of experiments, and on one day a week, employees come in and you work without being online, just to engage in conversation and things you learn from people when you're sitting across face-to-face from them. Anyway, this guy, he's totally into it. At first, as you can imagine, really difficult, no BlackBerry, no computer. And he was like, all the people who I have to talk to, they're going to freak out, they're going to worry about me. Well, they didn't. They were fine, and the world did not end.
I usually do that. It's called Saturday.
Yeah. The guy, it was Mark Bittman who wrote that.
Yeah,
right? How to Cook Everything guy.
Yeah, exactly. So I support this. I think we should all do it.
Laura, our intern.
Speaking of cooking, or actually not cooking, this is the second most emailed from the International Herald Tribune. A swig of live fish, a Flemish town's ritual draws condemnation. So since the 1300s in this town in the Flemish part of Belgium, people have been drinking live fish with wine.
Not drinking like fish.
Live.
Drinking live fish.
Live fish. Okay. They might be drinking them like fish, but the fish are in wine, so could be. And so they're downing them for this spring festival. It's a pagan festival. And some of the animal rights activists really don't like it. And what's their humane suggestion? That the fish get electrocuted before they are drunk down, because apparently...
What? I don't know if they got all the memos from the animal rights
club
when they signed up. They deleted a couple emails, I think. Okay, Dan, you're up next.
Hey, guys. We got a most email here from the New York Times entitled, How Do You Prove You're a Jew? This is from yesterday's magazine, Sunday Magazine. It's actually a very long article, so I can't give you every single detail of it. It's pretty interesting. But it's kind of all about, especially a lot of tension between American Jews and when they go to Israel, and the fact that these standards of how do you qualify as a Jew to get certain benefits or to get married in Israel, which you have to be Jewish, because it's only religious when you get married in Israel. It's not a civil ceremony. And so how do you prove it? And this has been a sort of source of tension between American Jews and Israeli Jews, and how the standards are getting more and more strict, and you have to really go through a whole genealogical search in many cases to show that you are Jewish. And it was pretty interesting. The tensions started to really rise in the 80s when a lot of Soviets were coming to Israel, and there were some who were not Jewish, who posed as Jews just to get out of the Soviet Union, because Israel was opening their doors to Jews, and Jews were the only ones who could get out of the Soviet Union. And so a lot of people posed as Jews, and that's when they started realizing, oh, we got to really beef up our standards here. At least that was what some folks in the chief rabbinate said. So kind of an interesting story. We'll link to it on the blog.
All right, Dan, thank you. Sure. Ian.
This is a most viewed from WIS News 10 in Columbia, South Carolina. About 20 years ago, a being called Lizard Man surfaced in 1988. He came out of Scape or Swamp. He was 7 feet tall, green skin, 3 toes, 3 claws, and he ripped the bumper off a car. The story goes, now Lizard Man may be back. Let's hear some of the county sheriff talking about the buzz in Lee County, South Carolina.
Sheriff, the Lizard Man's back. And then, you know, you think it's a joke, but then you look at the damage of the vehicle. It's hard to say.
Now, the reason I wanted to play that is because the sheriff's impressions echo mine exactly. I was like, Lizard Man, this is crazy. And then I saw a picture of this car. Nothing but a Lizard Man could have done that.
Really?
Some people are saying bear, but I'm pretty sure it was a Lizard Man. The story was, I watched it. It was pretty awesome. I was like, oh, it's funny. And then there's a point where the guy that owns the car that was damaged by the new Lizard Man pulled out a gun and said he's ready to defend his home. And Lizard Man took a serious turn.
Lizard Man. All right, Ian, thank you so much. This is the most viewed on Yahoo. Kind of a sad story. Canadian rocker Jeff Healey died of cancer. He was just 41 years old. People may not necessarily remember the name. They might remember his hit song, Angel Eyes. Can we play a little bit of that? So a lot of people might remember, he used to play the guitar on his lap because he lost his eyesight when he was about one to retinoblastoma, and he'd been fighting the disease his whole life. He'd been going through chemotherapy, but it had spread to his legs and then his lungs, and he passed away after a pretty serious course of chemotherapy. That's it for the most, folks. These stories and more on our website at npr.org/Bryant Park. Thanks, everybody.
Later.
See ya.
Bye.